Good evening. My name is Raphael. I'm an addict.
Hey, Raphael.
It is such an honor to be here with my family, and everybody in this room truly is my family. I'm going to talk to you for a little while about Step 12 and Tradition 12, and then my brother in recovery, Roosevelt, here is going to bring it home for us this evening. I know it's been a long day for most of the folks in the room. Let's pause and reflect for a minute about how fortunate we are to be here at this convention, because that's definitely what I was thinking about. As I was driving down this beautiful road with the sun shining, my wife beside me, the gifts of recovery, what a privilege it is for us to be here, to be clean, and to be surrounded by love and fellowship. The last time I was at this convention, I'm going to date myself a little bit here, CPR CNA number one was 1987, and that was the last time I was at this convention. I'm not a big convention person. I don't like crowds. But what enables me to stand up in front of a group and speak is the message of recovery. And we're talking about Step 12, so that's very relevant. I'll be honest, I've never had any shyness about standing up and talking about recovery. And for somebody that would normally be pretty shy in front of a crowd, that's an amazing thing. Now, I speak professionally in my line of work. I go and present at conventions. And when I present at conventions, it takes me months to prepare my presentations, all-nighters, working on the PowerPoint. And what's so beautiful about coming to a convention like this is there's absolutely no preparation necessary at all. You know what my preparation consists of? I say a prayer. And in that prayer, I just simply say, God, help me tell the truth. Help me be honest. Help me carry your message of recovery. That's it. That's my preparation, because it's not me that's speaking. Everything I'm going to share with you is my experience. I'll do my best to be truthful. And if it resonates with you, it's because of that commonality that we share, this journey of recovery we're all in together. I've gone to meetings all over the United States. I've gone to meetings all over the world, and I've always felt at home. And everywhere you go, there we are. And you can walk into a meeting in South Dakota or California. It really doesn't matter. I've gone to meetings in Mexico City. I've gone to meetings in Prague, and you walk in, and it's, you know, the faces may look a little different, but it's the same people, and it's the same disease. So what a miracle that we're all here together to celebrate the journey of recovery. And what I love about Step 12 is that there's a promise embedded in Step 12. It's a promise in the very first phrase. There's three really important concepts in Step 12. And when we think about Step 12, very often I think people tend to focus on the 12-step call, being of service to others. And we ignore that there's two other really important concepts embedded in this step. So I'm going to talk about the first one, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. That's a promise. The way I read that and the way I've experienced that in my life is it says, by the time I get to Step 12, I will have had a spiritual awakening. Wow, that's deep, right? Is there anybody in this room that has not had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps? I think this promise is true for all of us. And if it's not true yet, please believe me, I think it will come for you as well. It is so true for me in my life. So how did I come to this spiritual awakening? Well, it was not an event. It was a process. And it started by attraction rather than promotion. So I was on the street for years. The only place where I belonged was the street, and I knew exactly where my life was going to end. It was going to end on the street. I was okay with that because that was my world. That was the only world I knew. All the people I knew were using addicts, and I knew very well that my end was going to be jails, institutions, or death. And it just didn't, I never saw anybody get clean. Clean to me meant you went away, you got locked up for a few years, got some good meals in you, lifted some weights, it came out, you looked great, you were clean. That's what clean meant. And then we took you to the cooker, and within a couple days, you were right back in it. Okay, but that's what my conception of clean was. That was the only thing I could conceive of as being clean. But by a series of strange events, I found myself in a new city, away from my using partners, away from the streets that I knew, and just really, really whipped. I was tired. I was really, really tired. And I just didn't have the energy to go out and find out where to score and find out, you know, who I could trust and who I couldn't trust. And so I was on methadone maintenance, and I was just keeping a real low profile. And I started working again. And I got a roof over my head. And on the surface, you know, things had dramatically improved in my life. It was the first time I'd been employed in years. I had gone through years and years of hardcore homelessness, and for the first time I had a roof over my head. So on the surface, everything was great. But inside, I was still a hot mess, trust me. Okay? So I was working, and there was this guy at work. He just had the most attractive vibe. He just had the most amazing energy, and he would come in every day, and he was always singing, and he had positive energy, and it was very attractive. And I started talking with this guy, and in the course of talking, he mentioned he'd lived in New York. Well, of course, New York is where I went through my active addiction. And I said, "You lived in New York? I lived in New York, too." I said, "What did you used to do in New York? Where'd you live?" He was always to hang out on the Lower East Side. I was like, "Wow, me too, Lower East Side. Man, what did you do on the Lower East Side?" And he said, "A lot of drugs, mostly." I was like, "Yeah, me too. Wow." So, what's different in your life now? Because it was clear that he wasn't about the old things. He said, "I'm in recovery. I'm in this program called Narcotics Anonymous. And if you'd ever like to come to a meeting with me, I'd be happy to take you." Attraction, not promotion. Notice this guy didn't come up and hit me over the head and said, "You know, you must come to an NA meeting with me." I came to him, and then he broke his anonymity. So think about that, because we're going to come back to that concept. He broke his anonymity in order to do what? To help me, okay? So there we were. Now, did I jump up and say, "Hey, let's go to an NA meeting?" No, I didn't. I was petrified. Wow, man, NA meeting, that's a little too heavy. That means I never have to use again, and oh my God, that's I can't deal with that, okay? I'm taking a break. I'm recharging my batteries, but I'm not about to stop using for the rest of my life, okay? So, but you know what? I was really curious. And as I mentioned, I was really tired. So really the only thing I can take credit for in terms of getting to my first NA meeting, besides just taking that one critical step of showing up, was being really whipped. So I came to my first meeting with him a few months after he'd mentioned it. And folks, I'm not going to lie to you. I was absolutely petrified. I was so scared. And something very powerful happened to me in that first meeting. And I was reading in the It Works How and Why, and they talk about how many of us cannot remember what was said at our first meeting or who was there. I can remember everything that was said at my first meeting. I can tell you exactly to this day who the people were that were in that room. I remember it like it was yesterday. And we sat in a circle, and I was one of the last people to share. And they went around the circle. And by the time they came to me, I mean, I was devastated, because it was the first time I had ever seen clean addicts. I had seen using addicts my entire life. I had never seen clean addicts. It was obvious to me that they came from the same tribe as me. And they were telling their stories. I was like, "Okay, yeah, you're the real thing. I get that. But there's something different. Like, there's a light on in your eyes, and you seem to be about something today." And it was so attractive to me. And so I have no idea what it was that guided me to speak simply and honestly at my first meeting, because believe me, lying was my first response to any new situation, okay? Lying was my first response to any situation, period. That was the defense mechanism that enabled me to survive on the street. Why tell the truth when you can lie, okay? But for some reason, I was guided to tell the truth at my first meeting. So I raised my hand, identified myself as an addict, and I said, I have a lot of reservations. I don't want to stop using for the rest of my life. I'm really frightened. By speaking the truth, I was able to get the help that I needed. If I hadn't spoken the truth at that first meeting, and I've seen it happen to a lot of folks, it's really easy to come in these rooms and slide right back out without anybody noticing you. By speaking the truth, people were able to come up to me and give me the information I needed to help save my life. Okay? So I have no idea who guided me. Well, I do have an idea who guided me to speak the truth, but it certainly wasn't me. It was definitely my higher power. I had no conception of a higher power when I came to these rooms. And my higher power, just couldn't conceive it. I really could not conceive it. I had seen, I'd seen a lot of death, and I just, the idea that there was some loving force in the universe was just really hard for me to grasp. And how it might apply in my own life was even harder to grasp. Now, what kept me coming back was the attraction towards the people in the rooms. I was so attracted to what they had to say, even if it frightened me. I didn't understand 90% of it. And this is the other thing that's important for me to talk about as it relates to the 12th step, carrying the message. What I found was, and this has been my own experience, is that the things people shared with me didn't necessarily click at the time that they were sharing. The things that people shared in the rooms many times meant no sense to me. But what happened was I remembered them and I put them in my back pocket. And those very same things that people were saying that made no sense to me wound up saving my life months or even years down the road. Mm-hmm. So I share this with my sponsees today because they come to me and they talk about their sponsees and they say, wow, it doesn't feel like I'm making any difference in this person's life. They keep relapsing. And what I tell them is the success of your sponsorship is not dictated by whether the person you're sponsoring uses or not. Okay, the success of your sponsorship is dictated by whether you used or not. Did you use? No. Okay, well, then it was a successful sponsorship relationship. Okay? And the things that you are doing for that person, the information you are sharing, it may take years for them to be ready to use that information, but it was not wasted effort. It was not wasted effort. So think for all of us in these rooms, think about how many times somebody said something to us that we just were really not ready to accept or hear. And it was only months or years later that it finally became relevant to us. So that's what happened to me, because I came to the rooms and I heard people share their experience about how they thought they could control their use of drugs by only using one certain drug. And it didn't work out for them very well. And I was like, well, you know, I still got my reservations, you know, and I'm not ready to get off methadone and so on and so forth. Gradually, though, folks, it started to come together for me. And I really started to want what the other people in the rooms had. So I made the decision to begin detoxing off the methadone. I had no role models at my clinic. I was the only person that was voluntarily detoxing. Every morning, you know, when I would come in, I'd have to run the gauntlet of the pill dealers on either side of the sidewalk, you know, to get in and out. Thank God I had the people in the rooms, and I began establishing new relationships to help guide me in this process. Long story short, because I'm getting to the spiritual awakening part, people were sharing information. What was so attractive about the program to me was nobody told me what to do. What they did was they shared their own experience. And it was up to me to decide whether to use that information and how to use that information. Like a lot of addicts, like a lot of people with the disease of addiction, I am very hard-headed. And if you tell me to do A, I am most likely to do B just because. Okay, that's just the way I'm wired. Nobody told me what to do. Nobody said, you need to do this, you need to do that. What they did was they said, this is what I did, and this is how it worked for me. That may prove useful to you at some point. And they left it to me to connect the dots. That's what saved my life, folks. That's what really saved my life. So 9 months of going to meetings on a daily basis for 9 months, I finally got into a hospital to finish the last part of my detox. It was a little 5-day program. And day three, I hadn't slept in 3 days, and I was going through very, very bad withdrawal. It was the middle of the night. And I knew that I didn't have what it took to stay in that hospital and finish the detox. I was not strong enough. I was just in too much pain. But at the same time, I knew that if I left that hospital and went out to seek something to take away the pain, I would be throwing away everything that I'd been working the last 9 months to get. I would be throwing away my chance at recovery. And then I remembered something that somebody had said to me 6 months before in the rooms that didn't make any sense at the time. And what he said was, at some point in your recovery, the only thing between you and using will be a power greater than yourself. You will be completely alone. The people in the rooms will not be with you. And the only thing between you and using will be a power greater than yourself. And there I was. That's exactly where I was. And I had no conception of a higher power. And I knew that I did not have the strength to go through that withdrawal. I was powerless. So for the first time in my life, I admitted I was powerless. And I got down on my knees, which I had never done before, and I prayed. And what I prayed to was whatever was keeping everyone else in the rooms clean. And I said, whatever you are, I don't know what you are, but you must be real because you're working for these other people. Please come and help me right now because I cannot do this by myself. So at that point, I was coming to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, and I was making a decision to turn my will and my life over to that higher power. And as soon as I said that prayer, an amazing warm sensation came over me, and I heard a voice. And that voice in my head said, "It's going to be all right. I'm going to take care of you. Get back up in the bed, pull the covers over you. You're going to get through this. I'm going to take care of you." And that's exactly what I did. And I fell asleep that night for the first time in 3 days. I woke up the next morning. I was still in withdrawal, but the pain was now bearable. And I finished that detox, and I walked out of that hospital clean for the first time in my adult life. And vulnerable as a newborn fawn. I mean, I could barely stand up. It was like one of those nature documentaries with a little deer that can barely stand up. That's exactly what I looked like, and it was most certainly what I felt like at that point. But that, folks, was my first spiritual awakening. Okay, that was the beginning of a relationship with a higher power that is active and that's alive and that I nourish today. So how do I nourish that spiritual relationship? What is the point of these 12 steps? What is the point of still coming to meetings 24 years after that moment occurred? Well, the point is that I don't know how to live clean. I have a fatal disease, and the disease is not going anywhere, and it will always be stronger than I am, and it is just as strong today as it was the day that I walked in. What I have found is not just being clean. That was just the necessary first step for everything else in my life to change. So now we get to practicing these principles in all of our affairs. For me, the steps have been a very simple, very practical, and very real set of tools that I can use to change everything about my life, not just removing the drugs from my life. If this program was just about removing drugs from my life, I wouldn't still be here, okay? It can't be just about that for me. And keep in mind, please, for everybody in this room, all I'm doing is sharing my experience. In no way am I trying to tell anybody how they should live their recovery. This is my experience. And the beautiful thing about this program is we all get to find our own conception of a higher power, and we all get to find our own recovery. It's our unique journey for all of us. But for me, just being clean can't be enough. It cannot be enough. There has to be more. Did I find more? You better believe I did. Everything started changing, but the drugs had to be gone first for any of the rest of the change to happen. And that was why it was so necessary for me to get off the methadone. It didn't matter whether it was legal or not. At the end of the day, it was a barrier between me and conscious contact with my higher power. Okay, and the only way I could truly, it was very helpful to get me where I needed to be, and then it was time to give it up. It was time to take that next step. Because the only way that I could experience the full benefit, the full gifts of this program of recovery was to be abstinent from all drugs. So there I was. I was very fortunate. I picked a sponsor that had a strong spiritual program that practiced the steps, that believed in the steps, and that could help guide me through the steps. And when I look for a sponsorship relationship and when I try to guide others towards sponsorship relationships, the number one piece of advice I give them is one, find somebody who's living a life that seems attractive to you, okay? Try to pick somebody that you like because you're going to be spending a lot of time with them, and it's a lot easier to spend a lot of time with somebody if you like them. And then three, pick somebody that has real experience with the steps, because at the end of the day, that's what's most important, that we have that person that can guide us through the steps. Okay? So I started noticing things changing, okay? Things changing inside of me. And this is where I'm going to tie it into practicing these principles in all my affairs. I was a thief, okay? I was a thief. Every place I'd ever worked, I'd stolen from. So I'm in the program now, and one day I went to steal, which would have been my normal MO, and I found that I couldn't do it. Wow, this is really strange. I just couldn't do it anymore. I knew that it was wrong, and I couldn't do it. That wasn't because I'd had some great moral awakening. Just something had changed inside of me that now made me, I just can't do that anymore. And when I got to my eighth and my ninth step, beyond just not repeating the same character defect anymore, I went back and made amends and replaced what I'd stolen from every place I'd ever been employed. That was an amends that I had to make. Making other people in recovery realizing that I had a responsibility, that wasn't enough just to take from this program, to take all the amazing gifts that all of us in this room know that we've been given and take that home and just hoard it. The only way I could keep it was by doing what?
Giving it away.
And in fact, that was the only way any of these gifts could continue to come. So for me, sponsorship has been my primary method of sharing the gifts of recovery, along with service positions and just sharing honestly in meetings and continuing to show up. So I'm going to have a little shout out for people with some amount of time in this program. It's really important that we keep showing up. It really is. Okay, that's the only piece of advice I'm going to give tonight. All right, and I can get back to my message. But it really is. People need to know what 20 years of recovery looks like. They need to see how somebody with 20 or 25 or 30 years of recovery lives. They need to see that. It is really, really important. It's not just about getting through that first 5 years or getting through that first year where you're white-knuckling. It's about living a life in recovery, and they need to see it. They need to see what it looks like. And guess what? We all still have the disease. It doesn't matter how many years we have. Okay, it really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. So in terms of practicing these principles in all of our affairs, the other thing I want to say is I've seen a lot. I've been around this program for a really long time now, okay? And I've seen people do some pretty foul things in recovery. And I got to be honest with you, it really breaks my heart. It really breaks my heart. And so I'm just sharing that for myself to say that I truly believe that being clean is not enough. We really have to change everything about our lives. If all this program would ever be about is us just not using drugs and we continue to go out and be selfish and hurt others and not be men and women, not be good parents, not be human beings, it wouldn't be enough. There's got to be more to it than that. For me, there truly is. And the way to get to that place is through the steps. So when I'm wrong, I promptly admit it. Okay, it's not like I'm going to go out and not make mistakes anymore. I make mistakes all the time. What I try to do is take inventory, recognize the mistakes. When I'm wrong, promptly admit it. Pray to my higher for guidance to do what? To remove those character defects so I don't keep making those mistakes over again. Being clean has given me the opportunity to have a whole bunch of character defects removed, to have the overwhelming desire to use removed, and then to have that stuff replaced by a whole bunch of new character defects that were underneath the ones that got removed when I did my fourth step. So I got clean very young. I was not a fully formed adult when I got clean. So now that I'm out here living life, participating in life, I'm finding out all kinds of things about myself underneath the stuff that was on the surface when I first came into this program of recovery. So the journey of taking that inventory, of being willing to surrender those character defects, to humbly ask God to remove my shortcomings, is a never-ending journey. I'll be at it for the rest of my life. I highly recommend having a loving partner as a great way to come to terms, to come to a realization of your character defects, because you've got somebody else to keep you honest. You know, you've got some checks and balances there. If you're actually living with somebody in any way, shape, or form, you have somebody there that you can't bullshit them. Not if you're going to have a real relationship. And I'm blessed. You know, I'm going to acknowledge my beautiful wife, who's here and is the second best decision I ever made after going to my first meeting was the first best decision. And the only reason that ranks ahead of getting married was because the second wouldn't have been possible unless I'd taken the first step. So, but the second best decision I ever made was marrying her. And having that blessing of an honest and real person in your life is one of the main gifts of recovery for me. And she's been a true partner. So carrying this message to addicts, the last thing I'm going to say about carrying the message to addicts is I'll come back to attraction rather than promotion. The best way I can carry a message is by living a clean life and by practicing these principles in our affairs. Our words, yeah, words are great, but you know what? Actions are so much more powerful. And in many cases, it's not the message we think we're carrying that really impacts another human being. How many times has this happened to you? It's happened to me a lot. Somebody will come up to me and they'll say, "Wow, you completely saved my life. I walked into my first NA meeting and you were there and X, Y, and Z happened." And you're like, "Wow, I don't even remember that." But for them, it was like a crucial event in their recovery. And it's the same way for me. Things that people said at my first meeting, It was just another meeting to them. I'm sure they weren't conscious of what they were saying. But for me, it completely changed every aspect of my life. So how was the message being carried? It wasn't being carried by somebody sitting there and saying, I am now going to say something that's going to change the lives of everybody in this room. No, it was somebody saying, hey, it's Wednesday night. I'm going to go to Conscious Contact Steps because that's my meeting, and I'm going to show up. And you know, if I move to, I'll speak, okay? And so for them, it was just them living their recovery. But to me, it was a life-changing event. So what I'm getting at there is that carrying the message is more than just about, oh, I'm gonna lay something on you that's just going to blow your mind right now. No, it's about showing up for life. It's about the little things we do, whether it's setting up a meeting or just being regularly attending or just being honest every time we share or striving to be honest every time we share. Those are all parts of carrying the message. Sponsorship has been hugely important to me. I have a very full life right now. I don't get to as many meetings as I used to. For me, the sponsorship relationship is crucial to my recovery. You know why? Because it keeps me honest. It keeps me honest. If you have somebody in your life that you're sponsoring, you do not want to bullshit them. You know, when they come to you for guidance or experience with the steps, you don't want to be handing out something that's bullshit, and you know what's bullshit. We all know what's bullshit. You want to be giving them something real. You want to have something to give them. So for me, having sponsees keeps me engaged in my recovery. It keeps me on my toes, and it brings me back to the core principles of the only way we can keep this is by giving it away. The other thing that I have found it helpful for, if I have sponsees who are dragging their feet on some of those steps, I encourage them to get sponsees themselves, because that's a great way to light a fire under you and say, you know what, I've been putting off this eighth step for 2 years now, and this guy I'm sponsoring is getting ready to catch up with me. It's the time that I took that step myself, so I got something to offer him when he gets there. So another strong reason to engage in sponsorship. Okay, so that's enough out of me. I really just want to say we are so, so blessed to have each other as family. Please let's not forget the gift of recovery that we have today. Let's not forget all the loved ones that we've lost along the way. I've lost so many people I care about in this fellowship. I've lost them to drugs. Some of them have died clean from the diseases that we experience as a result of our active addiction. And those people are with me, you know, at every moment. They really are. Learning how to love people and learning how to lose people has been a really important part of my recovery, and I think probably for a lot of the people in these rooms. We are very, very fortunate, folks. This was supposed to be a fatal disease for all of us. We are not supposed to be here, but we are. So let's celebrate the day. It's a beautiful day. We're so lucky to be here, and thank you for being my family. All right?
Let's thank Roosevelt for sharing. Raphael. Sorry. At this time, we'd like to introduce our second speaker, Roosevelt.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. I'm Roosevelt. I'm an addict. I'd like to thank Raphael. Thank you, man, so much. Man, I tell you, it's such a blessing, man, you know, to be clean today. You know, what I like to do is I like to take time to thank a merciful God that thought enough of an addict like me to reach down in the horrors of my addiction. Yeah, man, and bring me out. And one of the spiritual awakenings I had actually was before I got clean. As I was sitting there thinking, I was thinking about the last time I caught cases. And I only committed crimes to get high. That's the only reason I committed crimes, was to get high. And I had 14 felonies. Yep. And the brother before me that got sentenced had 6, and they gave him 30 years, 20 mandatory. I slid down in my seat. I said, oh, Lord. And the judge told me, he said, man, you're looking at 120. Looking at more, 120. He said, but you know what? He looked at my record, and he said, man, you're a well-educated man. You've always had good jobs. He said, something is wrong. And he kept looking, and he made a decision that day. And somebody told me, I need to thank that judge. I need to write him a letter and thank him. Instead of giving me 120, what he gave me was 7 years. He sent me to the Department of Corrections for 7 years. And then he looked, and he looked again, and he said, I'm going to suspend all of that for 6 months. I had already been incarcerated for 3 months. He said, I want you to go back over there and do 3 more months. And then he hesitated, and he said, better still. This was in December. He said, I'm going to give you a release date. Gave me a release date of March 9th, 1991. So he took 120 years back, gave me 7, took that back, gave me 6 months, and gave me a release date all in one day. You know what I mean? That was a spiritual awakening for me. It was very spiritual for me that day. You know what I mean? And I just think about that. I think about before I got clean, I think about being the doorman in the crack house. You know, 1991, thinking about I had an afro with a pod down it. And I had some bell bottoms on. And I went down on the strip and I said people was looking at me like something was wrong with me because I was crazy. And I said, what the fuck y'all looking at? What's wrong with y'all? I said, man, these people tripping. Because I was caught up in my addiction, y'all. And I still was still back in the 70s. I was caught up in time. I was caught up in time, y'all. And a guy like me, man, what happened was this merciful God, he thought enough of me to give me another break. And when I got released, y'all, I had said I would never get high again. Man, getting high for suckers, man. I ain't getting high no more. You know what I mean? Man, the day I got released, y'all, I was on parole and probation. Supervised. The people would bring cup to your house back then. And I had 1 foot in and 1 foot out. They interviewed me before I left the jail and told me that. Any dirty, you going back. And I, the same day I got out, the same day, I was in the crack house looking out the people. Trying to figure out how in the world I got back caught up again. That's this disease, man, that we talk about, that I suffer with. You know what I mean, man? It's fatal, man, if it goes untreated. That's what Raphael was talking about. Continue to keep coming back. And back then, I didn't have any health insurance, and I couldn't get in treatment. And God sent me a blessing, man. Another blessing he sent me. Allowed me to get in treatment for 90 days. Left treatment, went to a transition house for 90 days. Then left there and went to an Oxford house, lived in the Oxford house for 5 years. But I need to tell you something important now. At 6 months, I got my sponsor. He's sitting right there. My cleaning date is December 8th, 1991. I've had the same sponsor for 17 years. I have not outgrown him. As I go to meetings, he go to meetings. We recover together. And when I did step one, I saw the insanity, man. For me, my insanity was in step one. The using, my first wife was telling me she was going to divorce me. She was going to leave me if I keep using. I kept using, man. I should tuck money here, put money in this pocket. Man, I should do everything I could, man, to try to not be powerless over this addiction, man. I leave on Friday to go uptown in D.C., man, just to get one. Just to get one, man. And I get trapped up in there, man. So when I got home, it was the same story. My wife would walk by me and say, yeah, I know you got robbed. Because I ain't had no money. I was broke. She walked by me and said, yeah, I know you got robbed. Because that was always my thing. Yeah, somebody picked my pocket. You believe that, baby? The insanity, man, that I suffered with. And then the second part of that first step, the unmanageability, man. Not being able to manage my feelings. Because as a little boy, I always felt like it was a hole in the gut. And I needed to fill it with something. And I used to fill it with baseball, basketball, football. Man, I played on two teams, on two basketball teams, two baseball teams. Played football. I was obsessive with everything that I'd done. I was trying to fill that hole, man. Trying to be bigger than, right? I had a little man complex. Had a little man complex, Mr. Stroh. When we play basketball, I'm checking the guy that's 6'6". I would tell other person, you get shorty, I got him. Then when I look at the second step, I look at the insanity, man, being restored. That's part of the restoration, part of that 12th step. Yeah. And it talks about not passing over that step with a minimum of concern. You know, it's, I can't go further if I don't deal with this second step, believing in something bigger than me. And I saw what kept ringing in my mind was 120. That's what kept ringing in my mind. And it was a bunch of youngins was at sentencing with me that day. And I was like, man, I don't know how I was going to do 120 years. They said a day at a time. We'll do it a day at a time. Yeah. So then I moved on to the third step. Making a big decision, man, to turn my life and my will over to the care of this power that I found in the second step, man. And this is a big move, man. Because I'm getting ready to turn everything over. This is a very big, giant step. And what he told me was 3 and 11 was a package deal. He told me 3 and 11 was a package deal. And I'm always, before I came today, y'all, was in meditation. I said, I need to go sit quiet. I need to go get in meditation. My wife wanted to know if I was going to wear a suit and tie. She said, going to wear a suit and tie? I said, nah, baby, it's not a conference. It's a convention. We can dress down. Because like Raphael here, I do some other things professionally. So she probably got a little twisted, you know. But the third step, man, when I made that decision to turn my life and my will over to the care of God, as I understood it, man, I made that decision. It got me ready for 4. And I did not willingly go into 4. I didn't. Pain drove me into 4. And when I shared it with my sponsor, he laughed and said, baby, you ready for the 4th? He said, you just right. Because I was willing. I took that willingness out of 3 into 4. Man, and I wrote that step. And I'm going to tell you, I had a resentment with my sponsor because when he looked at it, he said, man, it looked like you blaming people. This ain't about other people. This about you, man. So I had to dig a little deeper, y'all. Had to drop another level of honesty. So I started to see some things I liked and some things I didn't like. I saw some assets and some liabilities. Yeah, that's what I saw. And then my sponsor called me and said, let's go to Baltimore to a convention. I said, cool, that sounds good. And I had finished the 4th step, but I wasn't sure that I was going to share it with him. He said, oh, yeah, by the way, bring your 4th step. I wasn't ready for that. You know what I mean? So I bought the 4th step. We got in the room. He put a mirror there. We looked in the mirror. And he told me something very hilarious about himself to loosen me up. And I shared some of those things with him. Did 5th step with him. Man, I felt some relief, man. Yeah, I felt some relief, man, to try to find out what make me tick, what make me do the things I do, right? And I had an experience 10 years ago that I almost repeated. And it made me really look at my recovery. Made me look at my recovery. So about 10 years ago, man, I was working in a treatment center as a counselor. And, you know, I did something with a young lady that I shouldn't have done. And she went out and used. And I was, you know, telling my network, you know, I was going to go find, I was going to go get it. They said, boy, you crazy as shit. You know what I mean? You shouldn't have been messing with her, but you didn't have the power to make her use. You don't give yourself that. You don't have that kind of power. You know what I mean? And that person is clean today with 5 years and called me out of the blue. Called me and said, let's go out to dinner. I said, baby, I'm married now. She said, yeah, I'm married too. She said, but I just want to go out and let's just see what happened. Man, I almost fell for it. But I remember the experience I had 10 years ago. Plus, I had to evaluate, had I progressed in 10 years? Was I still stuck where I was at? Was I willing to go down that road and bring that pain up again? You know, and I'm happily married, man. I love my wife. I'm in love with my wife, man. I can't set myself up just to go to see what's going to happen. Because when a man and woman get together, we already know what's going to happen. Right? That's like me right now saying I'm going down on the corner. I'm going in the crack house because I want to see what they're doing. I want to know what's happening in there. So I'm going to go off up in there. I already know they smoking crack in there. That's what they doing. And that's what I'm going to be doing if I go in there. So sometimes I play head games with myself. But I thank God. Oh, God, I thank you. That he gave me enough to get past that one. Yeah, man, he gave me enough to get past that one. You know, 6, I became entirely ready. 7, I called him the fat man. He told me I had to humbly go back to God. Yeah. 8, I made the list, man. I forgot to put myself on there. He told me I should have been at the top. I didn't want to put my father on there, but I did. I didn't meet my father until I was 23 years old. I'm the youngest of 9 children. I never knew anything about him when I met him. I had resentment for him. Couldn't stand him. The program, another spiritual awakening, 12 step for me. I was able to tell that man that I loved him and I forgave him before he passed away. Because y'all told me he had his own story. That he had his own story. And I needed to let him off the hook. Because the biggest thing I looked at when I got clean, my babies were 10 and 12. And I had not been a delightful father. So I wanted to be let off the hook. So I had to let him off the hook. Yeah, man. And then 10, man, was living the program. And that's what he has me to do a daily checkup of where I'm at. That's the 10th step, man. Living the program. I write, had I hurt anybody today? Have I been to a meeting? Am I clean today? Have I did anything I need to go back and straighten up? Is there anything I need to apologize for? You know, I do that, man. 11 is my favorite. Man, I pray and I meditate and I get in touch with the God of my understanding that loves me and cares for me. Man, let me tell y'all, I had a spiritual awakening yesterday. My daughter, 30 years old, is having a baby. They called me from the doctor's office, her and her sister. Thank you. And we was hoping that it was a boy because we got a lot of girls in our family. He said, Dad, guess what it is? I said, yeah, it's a boy, ain't it? They said, yeah, you want to hear his heartbeat? I said, what? They let me listen to his heartbeat. I said, man, that dude got a strong heartbeat. Shorty gonna come in here with a bang. Spiritual stuff, man. You know what I mean? An awakening that the kids that I didn't treat real well. But now that I'm clean and y'all got me and I'm all cleaned up and I'm doing things different. And I get letters from them that say, man, Dad, we love you. And I felt special because they have a bond with their mother. And I was just checking. I said, did y'all call your mother yet? They say, nah, we wanted to call you first. That's big stuff, man. They love their mother, and I know they love their mother. And we got a granddaughter, 9. Oh, man, she's the joy of my life. Hi, granddaddy, what you doing? She's the joy of my life, man. She is. She looks like my youngest daughter when she was her age. And, man, talking about having this spiritual awakening, man, and it says in the green and gold workbook that if we get to, we've made it down to this point, step 12, then we've had a spiritual awakening. You know what I mean? And it talks about the message. What is the message that I carry? And it relates that to the 5th tradition. You know, the message that we carry. You know what I mean? That any addict, man, can come in here, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live, man. That's what has happened for me. My roommate is in the program too, my college roommate. Man, y'all, I shot dope in college. Got a college degree shooting dope. Picking pockets, paying credit cards, and writing checks. That's what I did, man. I was a college student. And the roommate that I had, man, he's in the program now. And when he first saw me one day, a spiritual change had happened in my life. And I wasn't that rough, tough, ring around the collar, try to beat you guy that always got a scheme going on. And he said, looked at me, he said, man, you gay? I said, nah, man. The change that had come over me, the brother was witnessing a change. Because I was always the little guy, had my hat on backwards, always had a briefcase, I always had somebody's ID in there. I was always walking fast, talking fast, and I always had a scheme going on. And I was always looking around, trying to see what was happening, you know. And I was standing up straight, you know what I mean, and I wasn't talking fast. And he stepped back, and he looked, and I really was offended when he said, man, you gay. That really tripped me out, y'all. But now that I look at it, he was seeing the miracle. You know what I mean? I was a vision of hope for him. Yeah, I was the message for him at that point. Because that brother knew how I used, man. I said, lock him out of the room so I could use. Hey, he'd be out there knocking, man. I wouldn't say nothing. Being there getting high. And he out there knocking. Said, man, can't open the door right now, man. You know. So it said, what is the message that we carry? You know, we carry the message. The message is hope in here, man. The promise is freedom. You know, that I could come out of bondage, man. You know, when I got up this morning, I ain't had to go look for nothing. You know, I ain't had to go try to get high. I ain't had to try to go do no caper. You know what I mean? Man, I got pressed so bad one time, I went on my main man's porch and got his lawnmower and sold that joint. You know what I mean? I felt so bad about that. You know what I mean? But I didn't feel bad enough not to do it. But that's some cruddy stuff. That's real cruddy. That's cruddy, buddy. And then they ask in the 12th step about carrying the message, what kind of service work am I doing? I'm in the GSR for my home group. Oh, man. Ooh. Whoa, 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 whoa. Patience and tolerance. I go in there and humility. I go in there, I do the group conscious that the group sends with me. I don't get caught up in a lot of personalities, and that's going to deal with the 12th tradition as well. I don't get caught up in a lot of personalities, man. I go in, I do what I need to do. And what I had discovered was what Raphael was talking about, was that one of the addicts in the program said to me, he said, man, you've been around here a little while now. You got a lot of blessings, man. When you going to start putting something back in the pot, man? So I went on and got me a GSR position, you know. Went on and got me a GSR position. Then it talks about practicing these principles in all our affairs. Man, for me, that gets a little sticky sometimes. Because sometimes I don't want to practice. I don't want to walk high. You know what I mean? Sometimes I want to dwell back into that old thinking. Actually, it's not old thinking if I'm doing it now. It's new thinking, right? Because it's still present. It ain't old. It's still with me. And I was going into the CVS, and I backed into this lady's car and knocked her mirror off. So when I got out the car, I looked around, did a little observation real quick, a little landscape to see who was around. Wasn't nobody around. So I said, well, you know, y'all was on my mind about doing the right thing. So I went into CVS. I said, well, I'm going to go try to find the person. So I went into CVS. I ain't asking nobody, is that your car? I just kind of walked in there and looked around, you know. Came back out as the way God would have it. Me and the lady walked out the door at the same time, but I didn't know it was her. When she got to her car, she said, man, somebody knocked my mirror off. And I said, yeah, I did that. You know what I mean? Spiritual awakening, man. You know what I mean? Doing something different. You know what I mean? I really, man, did not want to tell that woman. I was trying to get out of there without telling her. But she came out. And my hand got forced. You know what I mean? Yeah, so I told her, you know what I mean? She was like, oh, that's so nice of you to wait to tell me. I was just standing there saying, oh, man. You know what I mean? I got jammed. I got caught. You know what I mean? Yeah, I got caught. You know what I mean? And I felt good about what happened. You know what I mean? But I went down fighting, man. You know what I mean? I didn't just surrender. You know what I mean? I went down fighting, y'all. So practicing these principles in all my affairs, man, trying to act accordingly. And a lot of times the hardest place for me to practice these principles is at home with my wife. She said, you go in there and hug them. When you come home, I want to hug too. I said, okay, so we got this thing there in the morning time when she get up. I'm giving her a hug. Hey, baby, I'm hugging her and giving her a hug. And I'm being patient and tolerant with her, like just for the day talked about, because I have my character defects and so does she. And I got to allow her to have her character defects because she's still the same lady that I fell in love with. Ain't nothing changed. Just my perception. You know what I mean? And I got to continue to do the things I did to get her. Because I talked a good game to get her. Oh, I talked a good game, man. I shot a lot of promises, man. You know what I mean? I sold some stuff. So I got to live up to it, y'all. And then they talk about what are the spiritual principles in the 12th step. And they talk about we focus on unconditional love, selflessness. You know, unconditional love, man, doing things and not wanting nothing in return. You know what I mean? Man, because back in the day, Jack, if I did something for you, oh, you got to do something for me. It got to be reciprocal. And most of the time, I knew your payday. So I was like, okay, he get paid Friday. So I'm going to look out for him on Wednesday because I'm probably going to be broke Friday. So he can look out for me, right? Selflessness, you know, doing things, man, and not being selfish about it because I'm a self-centered guy, man. I'm the baby in the family of nine. And I'm used to having my way, man. I'm used to people doing stuff for me. Oh, she raised her hand. She got, I'm used to people doing stuff for me. And I'm the baby in the family, and now it's like I'm the go-to person. Now all these old people asking me what to do. I'm the one that's basically taking care of all my mother's affairs and doing the things that need to be done for her. You know, which is a good thing. Because I get a chance to give back. Because I stole from that woman. Yeah, man, I took all her stuff from under the Christmas tree. And left empty boxes. But guess what? As an amends, I put all that stuff back, man. The men's ain't saying I'm sorry. The men's is putting them, giving them people their stuff back. Give them people their stuff back. So I gave her stuff back, man. So it's hard, man, to, you know, with my family sometimes. It's a lot of stuff going on in my family right now. My mother, she's stirring up a lot of stuff, and she know I don't get involved. Y'all done taught me how to mind my business. And that's what I do. I stay out of them folks' stuff. She talk to my wife, and they be gone. And my wife be telling me, I say, you know, y'all know, I don't care. Because I don't. And she said, my mother tell her that. Well, you know, I ain't going to tell him because he don't care. Because I don't. I ain't minding their business, man. I'm taking care of mine. I'm staying in my lane with that, right? As much as I love my mother, you know what I mean? I learned how to stay in my own lane, man. And do what I need to do for myself, man. And stay out of the gossip committee, right? So, you know, that 12th step, man, is a good thing because after we finished that, my sponsor told me I was free now. He said, you're free to go carry the message. You know what I mean? And I've done that in several different ways, man. I've had guys from my neighborhood to come into the program, and I was already there for them, you know, to carry the message to them because they knew how cruddy I was. You know what I mean? And for them to see me clean, you know what I mean? Like, you clean? I'm like, yeah, man. And the amount of time. You know, that I've been here, man, uninterrupted. It's been a true miracle for me, man. But then, y'all, you know what the real kicker was for me? It talks about why does Narcotics Anonymous work when nothing else worked for me? What is it about y'all that I ain't shot no dope and smoked no crack in 17 years? Credibility. We have credibility in here. When we come in here, we see people that we know that was using. And now we know they're not using. I ain't been back to jail in 17 years. Now I go over into the jail sometime in the front way. Yeah. I go in the front way. Yeah. And walk all through there, man, doing what I need to be doing, man. Yeah. And I was over there one day, man, doing some work with some brothers over there. And I was standing by one of the cells, and I had a flashback, and the brother caught it, right? I was standing back. I was looking. In the cell, man. I rolled on up a little bit. I was like, I don't want to step back in there. He was like, man, you got away from there real fast. I said, yeah, man. Because I remember them days, man, and don't want to go back to that. Do not want to go back to that, man, being caged up like an animal. Don't want to do it, man. But it was my addiction that led me there. And when I started looking at, ooh, man, when I started looking at the 12th tradition, man, it was some heavy stuff in here. And I liked what I read, because it talked about anonymity as the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities, right? And it talked about the dictionary with anonymity speaks of nameless, faceless. And that tradition speaks about doing selfless anonymity. You know what I mean? That if we start to talk about we now in this tradition, and not about me, and not about I. It's about us and our. And this tradition talks about whatever's best for the group and not for me, right? And this is something that we read in my home group before we get ready to do a business meeting to make sure that we try to get the personalities out of the way. So we can make sure when we voting on something that's crucial for the newcomer that ain't got there yet. Because we getting ready to put something in motion for somebody that's not there yet. And we read it, it says, God grant us knowledge that we may write according to your divine precepts, instill in us a sense of your purpose. Make us servants of your will and grant us a bond of selflessness, that this may be truly your work, not ours, in order that no addict anywhere need die from the horrors of their addiction. Yeah. So when we talk about the anonymity, talk about doing things unconditional in that 12th tradition, what is it most important? And I've had experience with that, where the meeting gets off a little bit, right? Somebody shares something that appears to be off base or off whack. And people start looking at each other all crazy. And a lot of times I might say something like, ain't nothing out of order, y'all. Everything all right. You know what I mean? Because the theme of the convention is about our diversity. Our diversity is our strength. And talk about that here. In the 12th tradition. Our strong wills that we all have. But we just need to be structured and have some guidance with it. Right? We can't let it run wild. Because the personalities will take over in here. Right? And that's what the traditions are designed to keep us in, to keep us in check. That's what they do. They keep us in check. So when I started reading them, man, I was really... it says the principle of anonymity lies at the core of our fellowship's understanding of the group conscious. You know, when we get ready to go and, you know, you have a group conscious, and I was involved in one where they were picking somebody for a service position. And I abstained that day. Because it wasn't about, for me, it wasn't about the best person for the job. It was about the one the most people liked that day. Most people liked the other person, and they voted for that person. I thought the other person would have been better for it. So I chose to abstain and not vote. That was my way of looking at, you know, how we do things in here. You know, keeping things on the up and up on the keel, right? And making sure that we're doing things the way for the better of Narcotics Anonymous. Because it talks about in the 12th tradition that, you know, in personal recovery, our personal recovery depends on the unity of all of us. The unity of all of us. So the program is bigger than any one person or group. The program is. Right? So I got to make sure that I'm protecting this program, man. Because this program saved my life. Yeah, this program saved my life. And anytime I want to get crazy and think I want to go out here and do something crazy, man, I have to think about what it is that is keeping me, giving me the blessings and doing the things that I need to have it do here, you know. So, y'all, it's such a wonderful day, man. People came out to support this convention, man. We thank y'all so much. I mean, this was a big one. A lot of people showed up for this one, man. A lot of clean time here. You know what I mean? And I'm just so glad to be in the number, right? I'm going to say this and I'm going to shut it down. We had to go to a funeral before we came. You know what I mean? One of the young ladies was tragically killed that belonged to the program. You know what I mean? And when we went to the service, what they were asking about was, man, I ain't going to complain. No matter what, I'm not going to complain. And that's how I feel, man. I'm not going to complain, man. I'm going to move forward. I'm going to do what I got to do because I ain't complaining when I was using. So I sure ain't going to get on this side and start complaining. You know what I mean? I got clean drawers on, clean socks. You know what I'm saying? I took a bath this morning, man. Yeah, man, I put some deodorant on. When I was using, I didn't do them things, man. That stuff didn't count, man. I had to go out and do what I needed to do, man. So when we think about the 12th tradition and the 12th step, man, it's about carrying that message. You know what I mean? It's about carrying that message. Because it's somebody that needs to know that, you know, they can stop using. And that was one of the things I wanted to mention was that the message is that you can stop using it. This could be the last day that you use. And this could be the first day of the rest of your life. And you can have it clean. Yep, you can have it clean. So, man, I really appreciate the opportunity, you know, to kind of get up and do my little experience, strength and hope around the 12th tradition and the 12th step. When I got the call and they asked me to do the workshop, when they sent me the ones that was available, I didn't have many choices. You know what I mean? Most of the ones were gone. But what I said was, man, you know, this program been so good to me that, you know, I'll do whatever they ask me to do. You know what I mean? So I showed up, and I also the 12th step talks about being responsible, about the responsibility that I have as a member. I have a responsibility as a member, you know, to do my part, to make sure that this thing continues to go on, man. So I'm just going to tell everybody to continue to enjoy the convention. There's a lot of newcomers here. You know what I mean? If you see people walking around looking like they lost, give them a little direction and talk to them. Give them one right there. Just stop by and give them a little conversation, okay? With that, y'all, I'm Roosevelt C. I'm an addict. Thank you.
Thank Roosevelt for sharing.